Hey guys, I just wanted to let you know that this podcast is presented by mybookie.ag, and that if you use the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, that you will get a 50% deposit bonus on your first deposit. And given that you are a listener to this podcast, I would assume you're relatively knowledgeable about sports, and I would trust you to try your edge on the online sportsbook. You can lay down some money and get in on the action at one of the safest online sportsbooks in the world. It's the only one that I am currently using. You can wager on all sorts of different outcomes on mybookie.ag, soccer, football, any major league, esports. You can even create your own player props, which is useful for me because if you know anything about me, I do enjoy a good player prop. So if you deposit using the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, you get a 50% bonus when you deposit. And I will add this for listeners of the TakeCast. If you deposit using the promo code MATTEK and you send proof of it to me on Twitter, I will follow you on Twitter and you can have access to me via DMs whenever you want. That's the TakeCast bonus that I'm adding in association with the mybookie.ag deposit bonus. Now let's get back to the show. Hello everyone and welcome to the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. And this has to be one of the most highly anticipated episodes of this show to date. Our guest is none other than Draft Cheat, Peter Christensen of GuruElite.com. Everything you want to hear DC talk about, we get to in this podcast. We do Saquon, we do Twitter beef with our guy Matt Kelly, Fantasy Mansion. We have the Siege Wars, we have DC's Twitter imitations. I mean, literally everything you've ever wanted to hear DC talk about on a podcast is on this podcast. Definitely worth the free price of admission that everyone is paying. Of course, if you want to support the show, your rating and review on iTunes is always appreciated, as is your subscription to the TakeCast on Patreon, www.com, Patreon, www.patreon.com/TakeCast. Sorry for the verbal error there. With that $5 subscription, you support the show, you get some bonus podcasts, you get showdown episodes. We actually just reached 100 patrons last night. I know, you know, maybe that doesn't sound like a lot to some of you guys, but for real, I absolutely love all of you who subscribe to the show on Patreon. It makes a real difference in my life, you know, and helps me produce this show. It gives me a reason to continue making this show, to continue trying to make podcasts that you guys will enjoy. And after a quick advertisement, we will get into the show with DC. Daily Roto is a mostly proud sponsor of the TakeCast, a mostly sports podcast. TakeCast listeners can save 10% at Daily Roto with the promo code JANIS, J-A-N-I-S. If you are playing on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto will help you improve your daily fantasy results this fall and save time in the process with lineup optimizers, ownership projections, fantasy projections, premium content, and much more. They have all the good stuff that you want to help you make money at sports betting and daily fantasy. Their new lineup optimizer will let you build optimal GPP teams with stacks based on their projections faster than I can punt money off betting on Peter Uihlein. Sure, you can play the guys that I recommend each week, but shouldn't you also get advice from a proven daily fantasy winner like Drew Dinkmeyer? Yes, I do have better hair than Drew, but I also have his cell phone number, and that makes me a winner almost as much as it makes him a winner of the DraftKings Millionaire Maker. And it's not just fantasy. They have tools to bet on player props, golf matchups, and a customizable NFL game simulator for this fall. Save 10% with promo code JANIS today. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show that you have all been waiting for. We are joined by Guru Elite's own Peter Christensen. You probably know him as Draft Cheat. This is going to be the Saquon Barkley apocalypse episode. I have no idea how long this Barkley conversation is going to last. I hope the full hour, but we do have some other stuff to talk about. Pete, how are you doing, fella?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on the show. You're killing it on this new podcast of yours and decided to come on here and destroy you on some Saquon Barkley discussion. I know you probably think I'm just a total donkey believing that
I do. I believe you are pure donkey. So I am. I would love to have my mind changed over the course of the next 30 minutes.
I don't think that's going to happen for either of us, considering that we've hashed this conversation out on Twitter.com. I don't know, every single time Saquon Barkley plays on TV. So
feels like the Giants get like an undue number of island games too. Like it feels like he's on there on like Thursday night or Sunday night, like about 50% of his games.
I'm all for it. Everyone can see how good this dude is. Watch the tape. I know you don't probably watch any football games beyond what's on primetime. So yeah, I'm glad to see his talent on display as much as possible.
I actually do watch tape now. I watch the condensed games. I used to not like it as much, but I think there's more granular value in that stuff now than there was 3 years ago. DFS is way harder now.
Yeah, no question. For me, the all 22 is particularly valuable. I'm not like grinding every game back and forth, but you know, when I'm getting kind of toward the end of what I think are my finalized DFS lineups, and I've got, you know, decisions to make one way or the other, I think sometimes that can help me. I just try to see, you know, like who looks the healthiest, who's creating the most separation at wide receiver, even when they're not getting targeted, stuff like that.
All right. Well, let's do it. Let's begin. Saquon Barkley. So the first thing that I want to ask you is, what makes Saquon more valuable than someone like Gurley or Lev or DJ? Like the five or so running backs that everyone agrees are the best. You think Barkley is a standard deviation better than those guys?
Yeah, I mean, a standard deviation is a big number, but I do think he is clearly better than all of those guys. What's kind of funny to me about this whole conversation is somehow, like, I've got to defend that a football player that's super good at football matters. Like, for some reason, the Twitter, the DFS Twitter, the NFL analytics Twitter, like the default thought is that a fantastic football player doesn't matter to a team that's trying to win football games. Like, of course they do. So I kind of reject like the whole notion anyway, but to your question, I mean, the metrics, like if you just look at the numbers, Saquon is better than those guys. I mean, you can look at things like, you know, Football Outsiders. I'm sure that's a site that you use. They've got metrics.
I actually don't like DVOA anymore.
I think I've moved kind of beyond that too. It's still a part of what I do, but things like adjusted line yards. So they're kind of accounting for, you know, the amount of push that the line gets before contact. And if you look at like running back yards minus adjusted line yards, Saquon Barkley is off the charts. He's lapping the field in that category. Whereas last year when the Giants did not have Saquon Barkley, like they were on the complete other spectrum. Like the line was actually not as bad as it was this year. And the running backs were just even worse. So for me, he is creating a whole bunch of yards beyond any other running back when you take into account the line that he's playing with. And then there's also this, which it's hard to incorporate this in the stats, but some of the other, you know, running back stars, guys like Gurley, Kareem Hunt, that also grade out pretty well in some of these metrics. If you watch the tape, this is kind of going back to that point, like the safeties and linebackers for teams, for defenses that are facing teams like the Rams and the Chiefs, their first step when the ball is snapped is backwards or to freeze, right, to see what the team's going to do. Defenses against the Giants are just playing straight up downhill, right, because the Giants have no threat going down the field with Eli Manning. Like, he just doesn't have the arm strength. He can't extend a play to threaten a defense deep. So for me, Barkley's got by far the worst situation of any of these guys. And despite that, despite everything working against him, is creating just a ton of surplus yards compared to even the other top backs in the game.
I think you just owned yourself a little bit there, because in that discussion, you proved why having an elite running back is like running the ball in general against eight men. You should just never do it. If the quarterback sees eight men, literally 100% of the time, they should check out. That, like, every study ever has basically said, you run against eight men, your success rate gets chopped in half.
Yeah, so, I mean, we generally agree on the running back thing. Like, I think taking a first-round running back is almost always a bad decision. I just think Saquon Barkley is the exception. That's kind of my whole deal with this. If you look at all the data and kind of the general data for this discussion, I'm with you. but there's always outliers. And well, for me, Saquon Barkley is that outlier.
I guess the crux of it is I don't think that Barkley – I don't think that he's so good that he demands the team change the way that it calls plays or the way they structure the roster. I think for a running back to be that good, they basically just have to get a first down with every touch. Like, I think that would kind of, like, I'm not even, that sounds outrageous, but I'm, like, not even really being sarcastic to pay.
I know you're a big kind of touchdowns over everything guy, kind of just judging from your.
I've really learned a lot about football in the last year. I mean, touchdowns, certainly, like, I just want my offense to be scoring touchdowns. Yeah.
Of course, but Barkley can do that from anywhere on the field. We've seen it happen numerous times this year. He's a legitimate threat to score a touchdown every time he touches the ball. I honestly believe that if Saquon Barkley was on the Rams or even the Chiefs, but especially the Rams, their offense would be up a whole nother level from what it currently is.
From over. So you think that you put Barkley on the Chiefs instead of Kareem Hunt, and he has, I think Hunt has 3 50-plus-yard touchdowns. You think Barkley would have like 8?
Yeah, I mean, 8 is a lot, but 6 or 7. I actually, Kareem Hunt's a bad example because I think he might be the second best back behind Barkley. But Gurley, I think
Gurley's pretty overrated, I think.
I mean, sure, he's a good player. I actually don't think Gurley makes that big of a difference to the Rams. For me, he's like the, by far the most replaceable.
He's like the 8th best running back, but like a lot, right, of that value. A lot of the value that Gurley has, and I think that Barkley does offer this as well, a really good, valuable running back, the best thing they can do is not have to be taken off the field once in a drive, because it means that the defense doesn't have time to substitute, and it means that the threat of play action is more viable, and you can kind of move guys around pre-snap. So that part I do agree with.
100% agree with that. I think the running backs can play every single down, like you mentioned, are valuable for that fact. And like teams that have a first and second down grinder and then bring down a third down back or a passing, like that tips, the plays to the defense. Like it just does. I think like there's a lot of defensive coordinators who are maybe not smart enough to adjust their coverages and play calls and personnel based on that. But I think the good ones definitely do.
So the issue, I mean, the biggest issue here though, it basically comes down to the fact of cap dollars. And that's the reason why Barkley is bad at number two, is that you're paying him. He has the 5th highest guaranteed running back salary. There are obviously, good, successful NFL teams who are paying their running backs nothing. Like that's what, you look at the 2 Super Bowl teams last year. I don't think one running back on the Patriots roster had a guaranteed contract past 2019. On their Super Bowl roster last year, and Ajay did for the Eagles, but he was a trade target. So really for Barkley to be worth that pick, he's got to be worth extra even, because he's clogging up cap dollars at like the least important position on the roster.
So I do get your point, but like you are again using anecdotal evidence, like a few teams from the last few years to make a point.
Yeah, the Super Bowl argument is bad. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very bad. Like, yeah, of course, like there's a lot of different ways you can win in NFL. And of course, the very best way is to have an elite quarterback. And I actually think
not even an elite quarterback. I think the best way to win is to have an above average quarterback who you're paying next to nothing, because then you can pay edge rushers, you can pay corners, and you can pay safeties.
So I agree with that. But if you're the Giants last year, if we just kind of bring this back to this specific scenario, for me, right now, I would rather have Saquon Barkley on my team as a franchise than Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen or Josh Allen. Like, those guys are – I didn't like them coming out of the draft, and they look pretty bad right now. And those teams are paying those quarterbacks, like, I know a lot less than average, but they're not super cheap given how high they drafted them. And they're saddled with those guys, right? The Jets are kind of saddled with – for me, a quarterback that's going to be a bust in Sam Darnold for like 4 years, because they can't give up on him because they drafted him so high. So
the thing is that presupposes that the general managers will act the way general managers always have. So there's a couple things at play here. One, Darnold has not been great. I would actually say I'm more encouraged than discouraged.
No, come on, Davis. Come on.
I mean, I wasn't a Darnold guy. I wasn't a Darnold, or I, if it was me, I would have wanted Lamar. If I was one of these GMs, I would have.
He looks pretty bad too.
Well, I mean, get him away from Harbaugh, and let him play like a full game. But his accuracy problems are real. But yeah. that's kind of more my deal. Is I would have wanted Lamar out of all of those guys. But I think that Darnold has shown the most important thing is that Darnold has shown enough and had flashes that if the Jets wanted to get off of him, they could trade him to Oakland or to San Francisco if Jimmy's knee is worse than, like, you know, there are always teams that I think will take a quarterback.
We'll see. I think you'd have to improve some for the Jets to recoup their value on Sam Darnold. And of course the capital from the pick would be lost at that point, assuming that they couldn't get much back in return. So for me, it's Saquon Barkley was, it's not like, I know he hasn't been able to help the Giants win this year. I mean, it's kind of a weird question.
I guess the thing is that he's a luxury. The Giants will have to fix a bunch of other stuff first before Barkley ever provides that excess value.
In my opinion, a league average quarterback, which I think you can find in free agency most years, would fix the Giants. I think the Giants would have a pretty elite offense.
The defense is too bad. They would be losing too many.
Sure, but like you can argue, okay, running back doesn't matter because Saquon. Like so I see you say on Twitter, oh well, Saquon did this and the Giants still lost. The Giants have this record.
Well, I need to be clear. I am all my Saquon Barkley tweets, 100% of them, they are trolling. It's just out there to
100% of my tweets in general are trolling. So I get it.
Right.
But, like, you can argue that, well, and then I could say, okay, well, you know what else doesn't matter? Edge rusher and cornerback, because the Browns have Denzel Ward and Myles Garrett and got lit up by the Chiefs anyway.
Yeah, but they also have Greg Williams, who's, like, putting their safety 40 yards deep.
Okay, but I can make the same arguments for Saquon Barkley. So
I mean, I think more than anything, something that's going to end up making the you know, Darnold two truthers guy look – right is the fact that all of the decision makers in place in New York are some of the worst at their jobs in the entire NFL. The owner is bad. The GM is worse than bad. Pat Shurmur's really bad. Like the whole organization is not ready to build something in place that's like progressive at all. I guess Shurmur did call the 2-point conversion though, right?
Yeah, that's gonna make all the difference. Just knowing that one thing.
So okay, a couple other points I had here. One, and this is a point I made on Sirius a couple weeks ago, and a Giants fan actually agreed with me. Like this actually got a Giants fan to change their mind. But Barkley's receiving numbers right now, the way he profiles is he basically is Jarvis Landry. And no one has ever clamored for Jarvis Landry to be on their team. I don't even think Browns fans want him on their team anymore. And so a point that you've made when we've had this on Twitter before is like, yeah, Barkley will impact the passing game. But my thought is, you know, each target has a value. And if you're targeting the ball 3 yards down the field instead of, you know, 12 yards down the field, doesn't that kind of make your passing offense worse, even if Barkley is picking, you know, 6.5 yards per target or whatever?
So for the – again, Barkley – Eli Manning in this offense and this offensive line is too bad for Barkley's talents to make a difference because a lot of what he's catching are these checkdowns that are still, like, less valuable targets than just other good offenses have thrown to their wide receivers. So I totally get what you're saying with the Jarvis Landry comparison. My point is that a good offense, right, that – with a competent coordinator and a competent quarterback, Barkley's ADOT is going to go way up. Like, I think Barkley could be like a top 20 wide receiver, just straight up. If he switched and played wide receiver on a good team next year, he's going to be running wheel routes. Like he can like be fantastic on screen passes if the defense had to honor the deep ball and they could actually stretch the defense. So like, you can say that, but we just don't know. Like, we just don't know. Barkley's talents are being so vastly underutilized right now.
I mean, actually, I'm not going to claim to have watched a ton of Barkley tape, but, like...
Dude, he can run a full route tree.
He's like 5'11", right?
I think he's 6 feet tall, but yeah.
So using him as like a legit outside wide receiver is
not. I mean, that's never going to happen, right? That's just, but I mean, he could play in the slot a ton. Like there's just no question he can run a real route tree. The dude, we'll see it. We'll see it. The Giants will get, I assume this will be the last year of Eli Manning. I think Barkley.
Oh, not a safe assumption, my man. Not a safe assumption with this decision-making injury.
I don't even know. Why does Eli like even want to play anymore? That's like one of the...
Well, athletes are completely delusional about their own abilities. There's like almost no athletes who are able to be like, you know what, I'm just not good anymore. Like Eli watches the film every week and is like, oh, I can fix this and I'll be better next week.
It's just maddening watching it. But yeah, I mean, of course, injuries to running backs are more common by far than any other position, so you never know. But I mean, I think Barkley will be the best running back in the league for the next 6 or 7 years.
Does anyone have like a real good explanation as to like, is it just because they're getting the ball in the line and that's why running backs tear their ACL and stuff at a higher clip?
Yeah, no question. I mean, you just take all the, like for a wide receiver, you know, you get,
they're getting tackled one-on-one most of the time.
One-on-one. And you know, only like how often does a wide receiver even get tackled in a game? Like, 5 times at most.
Yeah,
like the top wide receivers are catching 8 balls a game, and a bunch of those, you know, you're going out of bounds or it's a touchdown at the end of it. You don't even get tackled at all.
So if Barkley gets hurt, does that mean that taking him at number two was bad?
No, man, we're not results oriented on this podcast. Come on.
So, okay. All right. The other note I have is, does it ever make you feel bad that no one else sharp ever agrees with you on this? Like, do you ever have a moment of reflection?
I regret the premise of this one too. There are plenty of smart people that think Barkley was a good pick.
Who? Give me a name. Give me a name of someone who's like good, not someone who's like good at DFS, because those are different skill sets, but someone who's like actually sharp and smart, who's like, yeah, Barkley was a good decision.
you're just looking at your own little circle of
that could be a problem.
There are tons of smart people, myself included, who aren't like posting complicated metrics that I've come up with myself on Twitter, right? Like there's just a few of you that are doing this. Yes, you guys disagree with me, but plenty of smart people think Barkley was a good pick, no question about it.
I guess my thing is that I don't necessarily think that Barkley is a good pick, but I think that if the ideal goal at the end of the day is to build like a pretty anti-fragile roster that leaves a lot of upside for guys who impact the passing game, I think paying a rookie running back that much money when you could be paying a rookie quarterback is a better decision. And maybe all these quarterbacks are bad. Maybe even Baker's not good. Maybe Baker is just going to end up being bad.
I think Baker will be good.
Oh, I think Baker will be good too. And I still think that there's a path to all of these guys being good other than Allen. Definitely is not happening for Josh Allen. But I think that with some coaching and personnel changes that Darnold and Rosen could all... I don't. Rosen looks kind of weak. I don't. Darnold though, it's kind of like the Jameis Winston thing. Like he's got to solve the turnover thing. If he never solves the turnover thing, he'll never be good.
What do you think he's like? What is Darnold so good at? I don't really see it with him, but we'll see.
I guess the thing I would say about Darnold is that he seems to not shy away from throws and tight windows, which is really important for quarterbacks to make now. And the two things he will have to learn is he'll have to learn to push the ball first instead of, like, he reads every play from short to deep. That's just his mindset. So he'll need to learn to read the plays from deep to short, and he'll just have to stop throwing so many interceptions. And I don't know, maybe he'll just always throw a bunch of interceptions and his best case scenario is Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, obviously super young still, and
he's 21. Someone football perspective or football some football account basically tweeted that like if you just look at the plays they've ran in their career, Baker Mayfield has ran something crazy like 4,000 extra like competitive snaps than Darnold has.
Yeah, and that makes a difference. So yeah, maybe Darnold could turn it around. I don't see it right now, but. Super young and, you know, I think a good coordinator. I think coaching matters a ton. I know there's some talk about
coaching that. Matters the most.
Yeah, yeah. I'm with you. I think, I mean, the Rams and Goff would still suck if it was still Jeff Fisher in charge of that team. I really do believe that.
They would, yeah, for sure.
And like for me, it's that offense is a lot. Sean McVay is the reason they're good.
And I mean, maybe Darnold will never be good, and Barkley will never win anything, and Rosen won't either, and Mayfield won't either, just because they'll never get good coaches.
We can just keep this debating this for the next 20 years. Yeah, that'll be fun.
Do you think defenses matter?
Obviously, they matter. This is first of an absurd argument. Again, it's like, if you look at like the entire data set, I get how you could like come to that conclusion, and we're specifically talking how defenses matter for like predicting fantasy performance.
Yeah, but in DFS, like what I told Josh when he came on this podcast is that I think for your purposes, generally, like mathematically, defenses wouldn't matter, but for our purposes of making like very close decisions between two guys, I think defenses do matter.
They very, very clearly matter for that purpose, and I mean, I think they matter overall. Like they definitely matter for an NFL team, right? Like every smart coach.
They matter like edge rushers and cornerback. Like if I was a GM, I would basically only ever be taking cornerbacks in the first round. Like I just think the value of having like not one, but like if you have two corners, you can just go, you're on an island with Julio Jones and you don't get beat for most of the game. I think that's like, that's worth like a point and a half for a Vegas line. And like, that's been true in the past. Like when really good shutdown corners miss a game, it moves lines.
I get that, but I do think, especially with some of the rule changes, with how smart offensive coordinators are.
It's harder to be a good corner now.
I think that's true, and I think good offenses are going to be just almost impossible to stop, like the Rams and the Chiefs. I don't know if there's any defenses that can slow down these teams if they're healthy right now. It doesn't matter. I think you could put like essentially an all-star team of defenders out there, let them practice, give them a good coordinator, and I still think those offenses would come out on top the majority of the time.
What would you do if you had like you have the Bengals roster and you have the divisional round playoff game versus the Chiefs? What are you trying to do?
You got to like sell out to try to get pressure on Mahomes and just gamble, right? Try to make
you think you would blitz. You wouldn't drop guys back. You'd blitz a lot.
You can't drop back against Mahomes. He's gonna pick you apart. Like that was kind of my big thing coming into the very first season of the DFS. You know, like I'm not a super big season long guy, but like once week one rolls around, I'm all in on football. And I was just looking at this offense, the Chiefs offense, with Mahomes' arm, with Tyreek Hill's ability to threaten the free safety on every single play. And you got Watkins and Kelsey and Hunt underneath. And I just kind of came to the conclusion before the first game that this team's going to be totally unstoppable while they're healthy. And that's obviously certainly proven true so far.
I think I would zone blitz him a lot. I think that would be, if I was a defensive coordinator, I think I would be doing a lot of like rushing cornerbacks and dropping linemen and just weird stuff.
You have to gamble, right? You have to gamble that that he's going to miss something and make a mistake and maybe you can, you know, get a strip sack and a touchdown that way. Or because like he's going to move the ball. You've got to do something to try to disrupt him and make a big play on defense. If you just drop back in zone, it's over, I think.
I mean, it is kind of interesting that like what's happening in the NFL for the first time ever is there's like no parity. There's like very clearly haves and have nots now. And the haves are somewhat based on having a really good quarterback, but it's more based on having a play caller who's like embraced, you know, basically all these air raid concepts, like four wide receivers and a running back or a tight end who can play like a wide receiver. Like, And I don't even actually include the Patriots in this. I know everyone like likes to bring up how I overreacted to that Lions game. I'm still not really impressed with the Patriots much. I think that they're a super vulnerable team come the playoff time.
I'm with you there. I mean, I know that like they beat the Chiefs already, but I think the Chiefs will beat them if they play each other again. And yeah, I'm with you. I think the key to for me an offense, a modern day offense, is making the defense defend kind of every inch of the field.
Yeah, 53 right? yards.
Yeah, like vertically, horizontally, at line. Like you got to stretch them out. Get space between all your wide receivers. Get four wide receivers out there and spread them out. And there's just not a lot of defense can do, especially with how tightly pass interference, defensive holding, those types of things, you know, contact beyond 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. Like in past years, those things have not been called as tightly as they are now. And so when you spread a defense, then it doesn't matter how talented that defense is. It's just hard to slow down all these athletes.
I love it. I absolutely love
me too, yeah.
games that are 42 to 35 are like
so much better.
Yeah. I've watched more football this year than probably like the last 3 years combined. Like I watch pretty much every minute of every game. I got like 3 screens going. It's just amazing to watch now.
No. Yeah. I love it. I love, nothing quite like an NFL Sunday.
All right. What is it like to work with Tommy G on a day-to-day basis? Is he like, are you reporting to him? Do you guys have a Slack? Like what is the Guru Elite setup?
We do have a Slack. Kind of took a while for Tommy G to understand how to use Slack, but he's on there now. It's not, we use it just mostly for business stuff. It's not like a super active.
Yeah, you guys aren't hanging out in Slack all
day? No. So, I mean, the person that I work most closely on a day-to-day basis is Jeff Collins. Like, we're the guy, you know, I do shows with him every day, and we're, you know, sending ideas back and forth, trying to figure out DFS stuff. Tommy, obviously, we do work together somewhat, not like, you know, not every single hour of every day, that type of thing. What's interesting about Tommy though, is like, I couldn't believe when I met him for the first time that he is like exactly the same person
there is no difference between Tommy the person and Tommy the Twitter account.
He's almost like more of himself in real life than he is on, like, it's almost everyone kind of goes the opposite way, right? If you meet me in real life, like, I don't really come off.
Yeah, you're a nerd.
Yeah, exactly. But on Twitter, you know, I just, like, act like a buffoon, whatever. But that's not really who I am. I'm just kind of joking around on the internet. But Tommy's, like, he somehow put his exact real-life personality, like, into his Twitter account. And it's pretty amazing. And it's, like, it's so genuine, you know? It's like, oh, this
is just, really, like, is. Yeah, Tommy is not a phony. Like, I've been at, like, a couple live finals with him, and he's just, like, running around the bar, like, smoking cigarettes inside when he's not allowed to, and, like, trying to hit on the waitress and, like, swiping on plenty of fish. And, like, it's like, unbelievable. He's like a tornado.
It really is amazing. And, like, I couldn't believe how closely his Twitter persona mapped to his real-life persona when I met him. And it's honestly, like, you can respect it, right?
No disrespect for Tommy at all. Like, anyone who can be that genuine, even Tommy's, like, political opinions, clearly, I couldn't disagree with him more. But he's, like, a very genuine guy. And so, I have no hate for Tommy at all in any way.
Yeah. So we're like very, very different people in a lot of ways. But like when we're together at live finals or whatever, we're best of friends, and it's fun to party with them for a few days, and then I'll have to recover for a week. But it's a good couple days.
Is Jeff like his Twitter persona in person? I think I've probably met Jeff before at some live final, but don't remember.
No, he's not. Jeff Collins, his Twitter persona kind of comes off like a bit of an asshole.
Well, he gets, honestly, I'll say, like, he gets bullied, like, on Twitter, like, when he has a bad tweet, like, Kyle Cannon and Empire, like, they're always rushing to bully his tweets.
Yeah. I feel like he's, like, can almost, like, be a bully to other people, too, though, at times.
Oh, definitely. Every time I have a bad tweet, he always comes in my ads, which, like, whatever, I don't know, I think it's funny.
Yeah. So I really try not to take Twitter too personally. Like, it's all kind of a big joke, and it's supposed to be fun. And I do, like, I typically on Sunday, NFL Sundays, I'm like drinking all day. So by like, you know, 5, 6 PM, then that's when I'm like tweeting stuff that I'll kind of regret the next day. It's like, oh, I gotta
just
leave it
hammered
up
there. Tweeting about how you want Barkley to win MVP, how he's on pace to be back ever.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So everyone has, you know, their own way to go. But yeah, back to Tommy G. I mean, it's fun working with him, honestly. He works super hard.
He's a grinder for sure.
Yeah, he is. He's got a great work ethic. So he definitely gets the job done.
People, like, I've noticed people on Twitter tend to think that, like, DFS people or, like, people who produce podcasts and stuff, like, don't work that hard. They're like, oh, man, I really wish I had your job. Like, do you know how hard it is and how demotivating it is to, like, you write DFS content and then it's just, like, boom, 12 hours later, it's completely worthless. You got to start over. Like, working in DFS is, like, hard. It's, like, a lot of work.
Yeah, it is a lot of work. I mean, I spend all day researching DFS, trying to come up with new metrics, trying to figure it out. Right, you're just basically trying to figure out the puzzle that is sports to the best of your ability, and try to be smarter about it than other people. That's why I love it so much, is like the competitive aspect of it. Like, I can't be, you know, I'm just like not a good enough athlete to compete at sports at a high level. But like, right. This is a way to do it. And I love that there's a measuring stick in terms of like results of who's better. And yeah, there's a lot of luck from day to day, from week to week. But the fact that, you know, at the end of any given day or slate or whatever you want to call it, you can kind of see, how did I do? Like, how was my process right, or was it wrong? How can I get better? That's what I love most about DFS.
Did you, do you golf?
Yeah. I mean, I play like 5-6 times a year.
That's like what most people who are not athletic enough to be good at it, like, they like figure out a way to become like a 10 handicap golfer. Like, that's generally been my experience. I was decent at golf for a while, but I just haven't been able to play recently.
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm not that great.
All the Denver boys are good though. Like, CSU and Empire are the, I've golfed with Rami before. He's really good.
Yeah, I've golfed with those guys. They're better than me for sure. I've gotten better these last couple of years, but yeah, hopefully maybe this summer I can get out and work on the game.
All right, I'm not letting you get off this podcast without talking about the boat video, without talking about the boat jump.gif. I need to know. I need the behind the scenes. You don't have to throw anyone under the bus, but I just, like, you need to tell me about the experience. Like, how long did the shoot take? Like, did you have to do it more than once? Like, didn't you almost like get hit by the rudder of the boat too?
Fantasy Shane, not everyone who's listening to this will know who that is, but he was kind of one of our you know, co-founders at FanVice. He did get like sliced by the, like, the rudder of the boat and had to go to the hospital. We did like we did the boat jump. I don't think it was a Ferrari.
It was a really nice car. Emac was in the car, right? And you were sitting.
I was in the car too. Like, we all took turns, like burning out around a turn, getting filmed. And then, yeah, the famous boat jump. Our founder Bill had a nice boat, and we kind of drove out in the harbor. We had like a camera set up on the dock, like, you know, I don't know how far, 50 yards away or something like that. And it was a one take thing, you know.
Why the boat jump though? Why not you guys just like doing something cool on, like, why not like throw a football off the boat or so? Like, why did you have to jump off the boat? Were you on board with the idea, or did you have to get?
No, of course I wasn't on board with the boat.
Did you know you were gonna get gift?
Oh, I mean, I knew Twitter was gonna have a fucking field day with boat jump. Like, that's just like totally obvious. But again, like, I don't know.
It's not that serious though. If I was in your position, I would have cannonballed off that boat, and I would have loved all of the attention. I think people sometimes think that, like, when you blow someone's tweet up when they're dumb, that you're like making them mad. Like, I love the attention. I like, that's why I like Twitter. Like, getting all of those ats is like delicious to me.
It is. I don't even really care like which side of it I'm on. I just want the ats. I just want the notifications.
I just want the ats. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. So like, even like this kind of recent beef with me and the Podfather Fantasy Mansion. I have not talked to him. Like there's definitely this, like, some like real animosity there.
How did the beef with the Podfather begin? So, by the way, the TakeCast is Switzerland for all Twitter beefs. You want to come on and talk about it? I don't take sides. I am the mediator, and this podcast is open air for anyone who wants to air things out.
Yeah. So I do. I'll acknowledge, I like his, I think he's got a great website. I use it all the time. And I was at the bar, and this is the funniest part. I wasn't even, I think it was like week 3 or 4 maybe. And, Calvin Ridley had like one good game, and the Podfather like spent like, it must've been like 25 minutes on the next pod, like saying how stupid everyone was that played him and how he's been right all along. And then this week, really had like another big game. Like, he scored like another 3 touchdowns. I think he had 2 back-to-back weeks. And I simply tweeted, I can't wait for Fantasy Mansion to spend 20 minutes on his next pod berating everyone that played Calvin Ridley. And the funny part was, I had 0 Calvin Ridley for like probably a lot of the same reasons that Fantasy Mansion didn't like him. And then, so I tweeted that. It was literally like two tweets, like not even, like pretty much just what I said, like nothing bad at all. And then he spent like 25 minutes just like ripping into me to begin his next podcast on the next week, you know, saying like, oh, I've never taken L, blah, blah, blah. And then obviously fired back, challenged him to head to head, and back and forth we've gone ever since.
I would love for there to actually be a head-to-head, but I don't think it's in either of your best interests.
Well, he literally doesn't play DFS. Like, he doesn't have a DFS account, which I personally think, like, he's on his podcast saying, like, bragging about the plays that he recommended when, like, I don't think you have to play, like, high-stakes DFS or anything. I mean, I said that before, but I don't really believe that. But, like,
I can't imagine. I guess my thing is, and I don't, I actually
like, you gotta have an account. Like, come on.
Matt and I are friends. Like, I've been on his pod. I'm in leagues with him. But something I've never understood is why season-long people don't want to play DFS. It's just, like, so much fun. And it's a way to, like, a lot of my season-long teams are not very good because I have Demaryius Thomas and Rob Gronkowski in every one of them. So, like, yeah, I just play DFS, and it's just, like, a way to remain invested in, like, loving the game of football.
Yeah, so I would be interested to – I don't think you're ever going to get, like, the real take from him just because he's, like, so over the top.
I mean, he plays a character, dude. And he does. He has monetized the shit out of that character.
Yeah.
Matt makes great money just being the Fantasy Mansion.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. I totally get it. But my honest guess is if you ask him, despite, like, you know, our Twitter beef seeming, like, kind of serious, I would guess, like, he kind of thinks the whole thing is kind of funny too. But – who knows?
Oh, he'll never know for sure. I'm sure he thinks it's funny, and I'm sure you guys have driven subs to his website and clicks to his website and pods, like pod listeners for him.
And vice versa, I think.
I don't know. I wonder what the overlap between Guru Elite and Player Profiler subs is. That'd be a really interesting Venn diagram.
Yeah, no, I get that perspective. I totally do.
something you guys are really good at, you and Jeff and Tommy, you guys are all very good at interacting with people on Twitter and like monetizing that. I like from like someone who is a, you know, a Twitter grinder and you know, really without Twitter, I wouldn't have a job. I wouldn't be able to make a living. I admire very much your guys' business sense. I think all three of you are very good at that.
Yeah, I think we definitely take pride in that. You gotta be active on there and engaging in the subs and all that stuff. So yeah.
Who is your favorite person to impersonate on Twitter? I have my answer on who I think the best is, but I wonder who you have the most fun impersonating.
So you have to be careful with this now, impersonating people on Twitter, because there's definitely been people that have gotten banned for doing this.
Your account suspended now.
I know. And so, like, I need my Twitter account, right? Like, mm-hmm. I can't start over from square one. And I think if I ultimately did get suspended for impersonating people, I wouldn't really have, like, it would be hard for me to get it back because I would just be, like, straight up guilty of the crime. Do you know what I mean? So I worry about that, but I still do it from time to time.
When you've had a couple shaken, not stirred martinis.
Yeah, exactly. I think CSU Rams, like, the classic one.
Yes, he is the best. Because with him, you cannot tell. You can't tell if it's him. Like, if you're just scrolling, you can't tell.
Yeah. So it's like his tweets are just, like, so, like, over the top, like, positive all the time. Just, like, you know CSU Rams, like, that it's just so easy to do. And that's why, like, people can't tell. I could impersonate CSU Ram like 30 times a day. Like, I'd never run out of material to send. Like, as long as they're like sports on TV, that's the best time to do it. When I'm like impersonating like Siege or, you know, Derek Carty or whoever, it's like the tweets that, you know, obviously when I do this, I, you know, put their picture and change my name and like try to like tweet as them. But those tweets, like, you know, when I'm like Siege, like, Siege wouldn't actually tweet that. Like, it's funny. It, like, makes fun of him.
Right, it's funny, but it's not, like, it doesn't trick you. Although, you tricked Drew Dinkmeyer with a
card. That was like the pinnacle of my Twitter career.
I was scrolling, and I, like, couldn't believe it. I texted Drew. I was like, how did this even happen? Like, I'm embarrassed.
I had to read Drew's tweet, like, 7 times to make sure that he was, like, not trying to like turn me back.
Trolling.
Yeah, exactly. But no, clearly he was just genuinely thought he was responding to a Derek Carty tweet, which was like the tweet was like not like there's no way you could believe it was real. Like, I don't know what came over Drew.
I mean, Cardi tweets about football like it's baseball, and it really rubs people the wrong way. I happen to think, while we're here, I happen to think Cardi is like a legit like genius. He's really good at projecting stuff. And I think maybe you disagree, but I don't know, man. He is really good at math.
Even if I agreed, I couldn't admit to that.
Yeah, he like I use the blitz. Like I don't play the optimal lineup, but those are projections that I look at every single week. But like it is funny to like yeah, you're never gonna have a stable sample in football. It's like just not possible.
Well, there's also like he's like trying to like sell this product, and then he's like. And nothing is predictable, and everything's random. It's like, okay, like then why? What exactly are you trying to do here? So I'm with you. I think Cardi is obviously very good at math, right? Like
he's legit good at math.
Yeah. You can't really argue that. I do think he misapplies it, overgeneralizes on certain things.
See, I am not very good at math. I am like a math donkey. So I generally kind of I let very smart people do the math and then try and hear the logic and try and understand it. And if I disagree with the logic, that's one thing. But I'm not like when Josh was on talking about the air yards, like it's not like I can't disagree with him and be like, well, actually, like if you do the cosine this way, it'll be different because like that's not me. That's not my training. That's not what I'm good at.
Yeah, so I guess maybe I'm somewhere in the middle. I'm not nearly as good as math as those guys, or at least technically as good as, you know, like if you gave me like a non-sports math test, those guys would blow me out of the water, no question. But I do think you can take those math concepts too far. If you have like a poor understanding of the sport, you can't just...
DFS is a little bit of a feel game. I say it on every podcast I ever do.
No question about it. You can't just rely on math. Like math has to be a huge part of your DFS process, but in my opinion, it can't be the only part.
Yeah. All right. The boxing match. Is it actually going to happen? How is the training going? And why should I not bet on Siege? If I was a gambling man, I would make Siege the prohibitive favorite, and I would also be betting on him because I've been in fights before, and those of you who know me know I'm a little guy, and size is a big, big, big thing in fighting.
So as far as the fight happening, as far as I'm concerned, this fight is happening. I will be there in late March to box Siege in Las Vegas if he's willing to do it. 100%.
Is it at a final? I don't even know the specifics.
So he wants to do it. I don't know. We were talking shit on Twitter one day, and apparently as part of the conditions, I have to play him in like a 10K season-long baseball league, which I'm totally fine with. He'll lose at that too. And then in that same weekend, like March 28th, somewhere around there, we will also box in Vegas before or after drafting this high-stakes fantasy baseball season-long league. So that's kind of the whole where it's supposed to go down.
So that's the setup of the boxing match.
What's that?
So that's the setup of the boxing
match. Yeah, we haven't figured out, you know, headgear, not size of the gloves, how many rounds, how many minutes per round, but all that stuff, I'm kind of open to it because there's just no chance that I'm going to lose this fight against Siege. Like I get that he's got the size. I mean, Siege is a.
I really think that you are overestimating. Maybe you're really strong and I don't know it. Maybe you like are really good at throwing punches and I don't know it. But that dude is a lot bigger than you.
It won't matter. He won't be able to hit me. I don't think I'll get hit once in this entire fight. He is like a big dude. Obviously, people know he's a large fellow, but he's also super tall. Like he's like 6'3".
He's tall too.
Yeah.
That's like more what I'm saying. Like he's got like you're what, like probably like 5'9", 5'10"?
6 feet, closer to 6 feet, 6'1". So I'm not like a small dude either, but there's no question I mean, conditioning, like that's just gonna be you couldn't be more in my favor. I think I'm probably stronger than him. I would just bet that I can like throw a punch harder than him. But the big thing is, I think I'm just gonna be like too quick for him to ever hit me. Not that I'm like some super quick
headgear. Dude. Headgear, I mean, definitely tilts it in his favor too, though.
I disagree with that. So I think the one way that he could beat me is a punch in the first like 20 seconds before he's gassed out.
And he just puts you out.
Basically, without headgear. If he lands a clean one, I mean, I don't know.
What if he's like, what if Siege is like training his ass off?
I highly doubt it. But I have been. I've been, I mean, if anything else, even if the fight, you know, doesn't go down, I'd be disappointed. But it's gotten me back in the gym every day working out, which I needed to do. So either way, it's been beneficial to me.
I mean, it's definitely, but when I first started working out again, like probably like 4 years ago, I remember you at like very randomly, you ended up giving me like 3 helpful links to things that I like used and like lost like, I think like 25 pounds. I was surprised that you, I guess when you live in your mom's basement in Minnesota, like there's kind of not much else to do.
Hey, you got plenty of time to hit the iron. So for sure. Yeah.
Why are you doing this podcast with me on your girlfriend's birthday? Is she at work right now?
She's at work. Yeah, she's a working stiff. I've got, you know, got all day to sit around and do nothing, as we DFS players do.
It's true. I gotta go vote. And like whenever we're done with this, you gonna go? You gonna hit the polls? Or are you gonna admit to not voting on this podcast right now?
It's a personal decision. Although I have seen, apparently you can like look up if someone has voted, not obviously who they voted for. So
you can.
Apparently, like I was going to lie and say I was going to go vote, but now I can't because some listener will probably look it up and find out otherwise.
There are extenuating circumstances, though. You've moved. I'll give you a pass. I'm not going to call you a donkey on this podcast.
Yeah, not voting today, extenuating circumstances, but I have typically voted in the past.
All right. So this is you get to pound your chest now. I really appreciate you coming on the show. So I want to know. You don't have to give away the sauce or anything, but you are not actually a donkey. You are, over the long term, I think you are a definitely a profitable DFS player. So I would like for you to talk a little bit about your process, not just for NFL, but just kind of like the mindset you take into creating tournament lineups in all sports, you know, baseball, NBA, NFL.
Yeah, so I'm primarily a GPP tournament player. I think I've been profitable in cash games too, if I wanted to go that route. But my mind works more from a tournament perspective, and I guess like there are really only two. You know, you can kind of break DFS down into two parts. One is projections. Like projections are obviously incredibly important. Just trying to give a player how many fantasy points do I think this player is going to score? And obviously I spend a ton of time doing that. Most of my time is spent working on projections, trying to refine those, get those as good as I can. But then when I actually make my lineups, a lot of my decisions, a lot of times, you know, I can't play a player that I think is the best play because I think that's long-term in a tournament, the wrong decision, just in terms of maximizing your expected value overall for tournaments. So a lot of these, especially recently, a lot of these tournaments are skewing more and more top heavy, where a huge percentage of the prize pool is going to the player that finishes in first. So I'm trying to maximize my chances to get those prize pools as often as possible. Typically that's been, you know, a few times a year for me. So there are a lot of losing days, but there are also some really big days that they can kind of carry my income, you know, from DFS play for the year. So like for me, if you project, you know, a wide receiver for 17 points and one for 15 points, and you know one is going to be 30% owned compared to 5% owned, it's a pretty easy choice for me to go to the worst projected, worst point per dollar play, because when they hit and the one other player busts, you know, you pass such a high percentage of the field. Whereas like if you put it at the extreme end, right, let's say a player is going to be 90% owned. That never actually happens in a GPP, but just
– Gurley was 65% in the Millie Maker that one week.
Yeah, just like –
That's like the highest.
For the theory of it, I mean, when a player gets up to like a 60, 65% ownership, they could score 100 points, and it doesn't really help you win, right? You do have to have them to win, and that's –
But it becomes about the rest of your lineup.
Right, but like it doesn't really help you get there, and you're trying to beat 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 different teams, and so that's one spot in your lineup that you're using that like can't really help you win the tournament. It can prevent you from losing it, but it can't help you win it. And so I'm trying to at each roster spot, I'm trying to roster players that I think can help me win a tournament, and typically those are the guys that have big upside and low ownership. A good example, just from the last 2 weeks, I played Adrian Peterson in each of the last 2 weeks. just knowing that there's a clear path for him, right? The Redskins do want to run the ball. Things are going their way. He's going to get 25 touches. He can have a huge game. 1 week that happens, and he benefits me greatly. I have a great day. Next week, he totally busts because the game goes in a different direction. This happened this last
week. So how much of projecting game flows do you do, or do you try and avoid doing that because it kind of skews your ownership?
So I'm not – like with the Adrian Peterson example, like I was higher on him the previous week than I was this week because I thought that game had a better chance to be controlled by the Redskins. Like the Falcons have had a great offense all year long, so I knew that was a serious risk. But it's not so much as – trying to like project the game flow. It's recognizing that like it's just all probabilistic, right? Maybe there's like a 40% chance the game will go this way or a 30% chance the game will go this way. But when it does, I'm going to have a 3% own Adrian Peterson who's got a great chance at 150 yards and 2 touchdowns.
It's really hard for me to make bad plays, which is like actually pretty bad for me in tournaments. Like I've tried to do better at that this year. But like to be very transparent, mostly what I do is just stack games and try and get like last week I just went Ben Watson and I think I had him in like 80% just because I was like, well, that's the one guy who will be 10% from that game. Whereas like you're doing a much more intensive process. I'm doing a much less intense process of creating tournament lineups.
But I think one mistake people make with tournament lineups is saying, oh, well, I'm getting contrarian at these two spots. I can play chalk everywhere else. For me, I want to be as contrarian as possible at every single lineup position. Like sometimes a player is in a, like specifically with running backs, right? If you know a running back's going to get, if you like know for sure they're game flow independent, they're going to get 20, 25 touches. That's chalk that I'll eat. But like for wide receivers, like
wide receiver chalk, you should just like pretty much never
like Cortland Sutton last week. Like, yeah, no,
he was like the worst tournament play on the board.
You know, like I have zero of them and you just like, if he goes off, then you lose that week. That's just the way it is. So you can't be afraid to lose on any individual lineup on any individual week. And just have to trust that if you keep making high upside, low owned plays that have a reasonable chance of paying off, eventually the right pieces will come together and you'll have one of those lineups that can carry a season.
Beautiful. Tell the people about Guru Elite, where to find you, how they can subscribe, so on.
Yeah,
and so forth.
Follow me at DraftCheat for those of you who don't. FantasyGuruElite.com. We've got good stuff going for NFL. I think we've been pretty on point. We've got a fun Sunday morning show with me and Jeff Collins. And then, yeah, NBA going super well so far and should keep going. So sign up if you're interested in that.
Does DraftCheat.com still exist?
It might. I don't know. I might have like lost the domain for like not paying the bill or something. I'm not
sure. My first domain from like 8 years ago or whatever expired and someone else from DFS Twitter bought it.
Yeah, it happens.
So I don't have access to it. All right, everyone. Follow him on Twitter. And if his tweets seem weird, it's because he's probably impersonating Derek Hardy.